This is a lecture for Biochem 421 for October 28, 2009.
All right, so this is the lecture for October 28. We're in chapter 13. We're looking at the slide that deals with substrate specificity, the stereospecificity versus the geometric specificity. I don't understand exactly why they call it geometric specificity, but they do. Do you not remember yesterday that you and I had a nice hand-holding exercise? Oh, mademoiselle. Again, a little too much Beauty and the Beast, right? So, here we go. Again, this is a description of what? Stereospecificity, where the handedness fits. But I asked, can I borrow your marker again? Oh, never mind, I'll use this. But I said that there's another level. I apologize. Did I step on your computer? Is there a computer? Is there a computer in there? There is not? Oh, I was going to give it a good kick. Apparently, that's my tendency anymore, is to. So, if we have, beyond that, an added form of specificity means that there is another way of making sure that not merely a stereospecificity, but another set of forces. And so, I illustrated it by using this pen and this cap, in which there's a match between there. And so, both we have that match and some sort of stereospecificity. This is the geometric aspect of it. And we went through, thank you very much, we're done. We went through and said, what are these caps? And we said what? What's one of the caps? What do your notes say?
Salt bridges,
what else?
Hydrophobic
interactions, and what else? Hydrogen bonding. So if those are not present, then that weakens the specificity. They cause this to be more specific. So it's not only geometric, it's geometric and these other forces. So I apologize for not being more clear on the fact that the geometric specificity, the fact that it's not merely the handedness, but the interactions of the not by covalent bond, but the interactions that exist in that pocket can also enhance the specificity of a interaction. All right. Let's go ahead here. But we ended here. Is that correct? Is that right? Yeah. All right. Enzymes are important accelerants, as you can only imagine. They're biochemical catalysts. And they can, as much as 10 to the 16th over uncatalyzed rates. Here you've got urease catalyzed rate is 10 to the 4th uncatalyzed rate is 10 to the minus 10th. In other words, just the spontaneous hydrolysis of urea occurs at 10 to the minus 10th per second. That's a ratio of 10 to the 14th. So it's a tremendous accelerator. The life is dependent on that accelerator. Now, there's several terms to know. There is the rate or velocity. I will many times use the term rate or velocity interchangeably. It means the same thing. It's basically some unit of mass per time. Some unit of mass per time. Moles per second, millimoles per hour, micromoles per 15 minutes, nanomoles per, like I said, nanomoles per minute. That rate is that. Of course, the rate constant is a calculated or experimentally determined value that links the concentrations of the reactants to a particular velocity. So the rate constant is a experimentally determined value that links the concentration of the reactants to the velocity of the reaction. The order of a reaction and the molecularity of a reaction are pretty close to the same. The order and molecularity of the reaction is how many different reactants must collide simultaneously to produce a reaction. That's essentially it. How many different reactants must collide simultaneously in order to produce a reaction? That's the order and the molecularity of the reaction, essentially the same thing. May I go on? Don't everybody speak at once. I'll wait. Okay? The number of reactants, how many of the reactants must collide simultaneously in order for a reaction to occur. All right. I'm going to go ahead then. All right. I'm doing the student one, aren't I? Well, silly me. Dink. And I back the thing up here. Boom, 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 boom. Okay. Is this it? Why study kinetics? Is that it? Okay. Now, kinetics, of course, what is the term kinetics? Kinetics is the study of how fast reactions occur. Kinetics is a study of how fast reactions occur. And you can see here that we use kinetics to find binding affinities, how strong something bonds. If you're just arriving, if you get out your clicker and to join, I've got the box available down here to join, so you can join any time. All right, because there's two more questions I want to go through. Okay, so when we study kinetics to define binding affinities, what kinetics is actually saying is, it looks a little bit, this is a very simple idea, and I apologize, it's not very sophisticated. You've got reactants that are interrelating in a way that's invisible to the naked eye and producing products. This is kind of a black box. You simply don't know what's going on inside of it. A black box. So the velocity or rate, of a reaction actually can provide a tremendous set of values to create a model to what's going on inside that black box. It doesn't sound like it should. It doesn't seem rational that simply studying how fast a reaction occurs would enable you to have some idea what's going on inside in that black box, but it does. And one of the things, several of the things it can find is how strong things bind, the binding efficient, maximum catalytic rates. In other words, that you don't always know what the maximum catalytic rate is, but doing enough experiments and looking at, you know, making a model based on the rates you have done, you can figure out the maximum catalytic rates. The importance of the catalytic mechanism, you actually can figure out the mechanism for that. And the role of enzyme and overall pathway, if you have a multi-enzyme pathway step, and then clinical analysis, in other words, that kinetics will help you discover errors in pathways. You'll have a multi-step, multi-enzyme pathway. You put a material in at the beginning, you get a product out at the end, you vary the beginning, the end varies somewhat, and you're going to be able to find, kind of, if you know what you're doing, what enzyme is causing the problem. The very simplest reaction, of course, is listed here, where you take a single reactant, it reacts to form a single product. P. You can also assume that there may be some intermediates in here. This can represent a mechanistic description. In other words, the actual mechanism moving one bond around to form another bond. It can form that kind of. You can get a mechanistic description from that. Of course, in addition, you have these rate equations where you have multiple reactants producing a product, and the rate, as you can see here, is dependent on each of the different reactants according to And the A, of course, is a subscript in the front of the balanced chemical reaction. The rate can be discovered varying these different reactants and then determining what that K value, that rate constant, is. This rate constant, of course, is the order of the reaction is the sum of the exponents. It's called the molecularity of the reaction. So the rate constant, the order of the reaction, in other words, again, as I said, the order of the reaction and the molecularity of the reaction is dependent on the number of collisions that have to occur. The rate constant is experimentally determined. The order, however, is can be found looking at the balanced chemical reactions or at how, wandering around here, but the rate constant can also be found experimentally, and that rate, the order of the reaction sometimes has to be found experimentally. We won't be getting into that too much. That's why I'm not worried that I'm kind of fooling around with it a little bit. But we need to know these next definitions, and that is this listing right here. Okay, most of which you filled in. Is that correct? Excellent. So I don't have to send. Unimolecular. Now, unimolecular means it's a single molecule as the beginning. You get a product out of it. It's called first order because of the fact that you only have to have one reactant. You have a bimolecular reaction, which consists of two different ways. You can either have two A's or an A and a B collide to produce a product. That's pretty common. But a termolecular, which is three or more, that's is a termolecular, which is three simultaneously colliding. That's very rare. And fourth order, in which four materials have to collide simultaneously to get a product. That's extremely rare or unknown. It's simply statistically almost impossible to bring three things to bind together, collide together simultaneously. Fourth is just unbelievable. Now, the fourth order reaction. Now, let's take a look at some of the mathematics with this. You're seeing some derivatives. Don't panic. All you're going to have to do is some simple algebra. We can see here that the velocity, the V, again, the V stands for velocity, which is another word for rate, which is some change of concentration per time. The differential equation for this is the change of A per change of time, dA dt. This dash does not mean that V is a negative. The negative in front of the, there is a negative sign in front of the D indicating the loss of the A, loss of the reactant, per unit time is related to the velocity. It's also equal to dP dt, or the rate of increase of the product per unit time. Now, we can convert that dadt into an algebraic form by simply doing some assumptions about the doing some simple mathematical assumptions and simply saying that the velocity is equal to some value of k times a, times the concentration of a. So, that is the first order reaction. V is equal to Ka. First order reactions are linear, typically. Second order reactions. Here you have 2A yielding P or A plus B yielding P. You can have a dA dt or K times A squared, or dA dt equaling dD dB dt is equal to KAB. So, you can see that very simply with the second order reaction, you can move quickly for the velocity simply being the rate constant, which is a calculated value, times the concentrations of A and B simultaneously. If you can derive these things to, you can rearrange these values, and I'm not going to get into that, but you can rearrange these values for graphing. And the first order reaction is really very simple. And you need to recall this equation. Ln of A is equal to ln A0 minus KT. You'll also need to, let's see here, I can know. The rates of the first order and the second order and the derivations are all you need to commit to memory. All right? You'll need to commit to memory. Does someone recognize this particular form of the reaction? Is that a linear equation? What's the general form of a linear equation? Can we rearrange this so that it fits this thing right here? Yes, we can say ln of A equals minus KT plus ln A0. All right. Where ln of A is the y, mx plus b, where the x is the independent variable is time, the y-intercept is the ln of A0. A0 means initial concentration. Initial concentration. And where k, of course, would be equivalent to the slope. Negative means it's going to be going downward. Right. Now, you can rearrange this as well, and you can see where 1 over A versus time is linear in this case. So you can create these two linear equations. Let's take a look at what this looks like. Course of a first-order reaction, the half time, the T half is the time for half of the restarting amount to disappear. So the slope of any tangent to the line at any point is dA dt, which is, of course, the same thing as saying k. So the slope of the line is the k value. We'll talk about half time in a little bit, but this definition you need to underline and recall. The half-time, t-half, is the time for half of the starting amount of A to disappear. That's always a part of the first-order reaction. First-order reactions have t1-halves. First-order reactions have half-times. All right. Velocity, reactant concentration, slope. Slope of velocity versus A in the unimolecular chemical reaction A yielding P yields a straight line having a slope equal to K. What this is, of course, this is the reactant concentration. I'd like for you to add the following initiation to this, the following addition. See where it says reactant concentration A? I want you to put an A0 right there. A0. Put a 0 right there, indicating we're talking about initial reactant concentrations. Then up here where it says velocity V, I want you to put in something known as V0, which would be the initial velocity. Initial velocity. So what this is a plot of is the initial velocity given the initial concentration of A. This needs to be enhanced by doing that. Right. Now notice in a linear equation, in a linear reactant, first-order reaction, the reactant concentration A and the velocity is a straight line form, especially if you're talking about initial concentrations and initial velocity. Now, what we can find out here is the following. So that is in a beginning of looking at that what a rate equation can say about what's going on in this black box. Huh? Well, yeah, I know. It's not initially obvious. We haven't really talked too much about mechanisms here, about what's going on in that black box. But we're getting an idea. It's starting that process. What we then have to do is let's take a look at what we know about what must be occurring in chemical reactions. The transition state, knowing the difference between a delta G and a delta G star, or I don't even know what the name of that particular, what is that thing called?
I think it's just a double plus sign.
Double plus sign, all right, I'll just call it a double plus sign. All right, so we know from general chemistry that the overall free energy of change for a reaction is related to the chemical equilibrium constant. Again, that first bullet is describing delta G, which does not say anything about the rate of the reaction. The free energy of a reaction is related to the rate constant. The free energy of activation is related to the rate constant. In other words, now we see that the activation energy is related to how fast a reaction will occur. It's extremely important to appreciate this distinction. That's correct. So the top one says, will the reaction occur? The middle bullet is saying, how fast will it occur? Yes?
So when it's related to the equilibrium constant, it's just delta G, and then the other delta G is the delta plus sign is related
to rate constant. That's pretty close to it. Yes, it has to deal with the energy of activation. That's right, free energy of activation, which is related to the rate constant. All right, so let's take a look. Here you see the overall free energy. Of course, you can see, well, I really don't care too much about the first thing, but the second thing is here very important. You can see here that you've got a reactant A, product P. You've got the initial uncatalyzed delta free energy transition state, the transition state catalyzed, in which it's much smaller. And you can see that given that high delta G of the uncatalyzed form, it's going to slow down the transition between reactant and product. So the effect of a catalyst is lower the free energy of activation that mathematically is directly related to how fast the reaction will occur. Enzymes accelerate reactions by lowering the free energy of activation. Enzymes do this by binding the transition state of the reaction better than the substrate. Basically, the second bullet is saying enzymes provide a new lower energy pathway between reactant and product. Enzymes provide a new lower energy pathway between reactant and product. The lower the pathway, the faster the reaction will occur. Enzymes do this by binding the transition state of the reaction better than the substrate. Better than the substrate. All right. Now, what is... This is the first time... Have we seen the word substrate before? I mean, you may have, but in this context, what does substrate mean? It's the reactant or reactants. So substrate, in this case, stands for reactant. Again, what's going on here, ladies and gentlemen, is an idea. We're going to expand this idea a little later. Well, just not to be leaving it hanging, that second idea about transition state binding. But we're going to just hang in there a little bit longer and explain it a little bit better. Okay, so, yes. Reactant and product. Reactant and product. Yep. Okay. Do you have this figure right here? I would like for you to circle this upper part of it and call it zeroth order. And this initial part down here, I'd like for you to circle and call that first order. First order and then zeroth order. First order and zeroth order. First order and zeroth order. Do you have that written down now on that chart? Thank you. Notice what the chart here has. It's got substrate concentration versus what? Velocity, which is also the rate. And way here at the top, they have something called V is equal to V max. What do you think the max means there in that context? Maximum. Maximum velocity or maximum rate. Vmax. Vmax. And notice, as we increase the substrate concentration, what's happening to the rate or the velocity? Is it approaching maximum? Right. Approaching maximum. So we can see here. So let's take a look. We've just done an experiment here. And I'm going to give you a table of data. I'm going to substrate concentration. I'm going to call the substrate concentration A. I'm going to call, then I have another term, another table called velocity. We're going to do a series of experiments here. Okay. This is going to be 0.1, 0.2, 0.4, 0.8, 1.6, 3.2, 6.4. Okay, 0.1, 0.2, 0.2. Right. Write this down. Okay? I want you to write it close enough that you can easily link the velocity to the substrate concentration. Okay? The initial velocity here is going to be 0.01. 0.02, 0.04, 0.075, 0.09, 0.09, 0.09. Okay. Can someone tell me what the Vmax is in this particular table? What's the Vmax of this reaction? 0.09. Can someone tell me where the range is linear in this reaction? Where's the range linear? Yeah. It appears between 0.1, you see, because I doubled the substrate concentration, what happened to the rate? Doubled. I doubled the substrate concentration again. What happened to the rate? I doubled the substrate concentration again. What happened to the rate? Not quite double, pretty close. I doubled the substrate concentration again. Boom. Doesn't double. Okay. So here, you know this part of it is, of course, first order. This part is what? Zero order. Zeroth order. It's somewhere in here. I mean, this is an idealized table. So, I mean, the transitions occurs in here somewhere. But whether it's precisely at that point or a little before, a little after, I don't know. You'll have to use your judgment when you see a table like this of enzyme velocities versus substrate. You'll have to use your own best judgment about these questions. But I made it very clear what zeroth order was. And what in this case, of course, we could say that this would be these right in here probably going to be approximately equal to Vmax. Because you can't get any faster, apparently, no matter how much you double the substrate concentration. So this table and this graph are related to this box right here. Can someone tell me what's going on in this box because of this data? Can someone tell me what's going on in this box? What's the mechanism look like here? Okay, let's take a look. Here we put in 0.1. We get out 0.01. Here we put in 0.2. We get out 0.02. Here we put in 1.6. We get out 0.09. And we get in 3.2. We get out 0.09. What's going on inside that box, ladies and gentlemen? What do you think? Yeah, there's some mechanism that says we're going to have an initial... There's something going on inside that box, some mechanism, some machine that allows relatively low concentrations to have a linear increase, but relatively high concentrations of substrate to have a maximum. Can we figure out what that mechanism might be? Yeah, we can. And we'll take a look at it. This is called the Michaelis-Menten equation. It was derived by Louise Michaelis and Maud Menten. They both received the Nobel Prize in chemistry or physiology? I don't know. What? Any rate, so the reason why Maud, if you have to understand way back then, this was a, women were not valued as scientists back then. The very fact that Maud, that Menten is named in this, indicates that she probably did 90% of the work. Louise Michaelis was her major professor, and Menten was his graduate student. Right? But when they looked at the work and asked questions about the nature of the work, he always pointed the questions to her, even though he got credit for it. It is what it is. But at any rate, so again, you see where some of the best mathematicians in the world are women, can be, and should be. Anyway, so what it does is makes this assumption. It then, you have to make a model to figure out, I can't see what's in this black box. I can see the beginning. I can see the end. I'm going to make a model about what's happening in that black box. And the model that these two made assumed an enzyme-substrate complex. It assumes that that ES complex, now guess what that ES complex means? Guess what the E stands for? And guess what the substrate stands for? Thank you. It also means a reactant. Yeah, I made a mistake. All right. So is it rapid equilibrium of the free breakdown of ES to form products is assumed to be slower than the formation of E and breakdown of slower than the ES to form re-E. So what does that look like? Adrian Brown explained the following phenomenon by invoking a now classic model along with the Michaelis-Menten. The model was this, and Michaelis-Menten made the mathematics of it. In an enzyme-catalyzed reaction, the substrate increased. Eventually, the rate did not, and it came up with this particular enzymatic equation, which you have to write down parts of. Is that correct? Excellent. It's amazing the amount of learning that goes through the point of a pen. What'd you say? You like to speak into the microphone for posterity's sake? I'm just teasing. All right. So it is E plus S yields reversibly. K1 all over K minus 1 yields ES, which then goes on to produce E plus P. So are most of you done writing it down?
Almost.
Almost, Mr. Babienko?
Yes.
Done. Excellent. Thank you. We'll go on now. This particular model is very, very important. By the way, yeah, that actually should be a lowercase k. I don't know why it's an uppercase k. It should be a lowercase k2, like a k2, just k2, like that. Anyway, so the enzyme and substrate has these k1s, k-1s, and the k2s are called microscopic rate constants. So the k1, k-1, and the k2 are called microscopic rate constants. They're called microscopic rate constant because the rate constant, by definition, deals with the overall reaction. These microscopic rate constants deals with rates occurring within the black box, within the mechanism itself. The enzyme and substrate are thought to form a binary complex called the enzyme substrate, which then goes on to yield product plus enzyme. This, of course, is a highly simplified model, but it works for a lot of simple chemical reactions. We have more complicated ones that are more realistic later. Obviously, the rate or velocity is equal to the, you can be defined as the change in the product over time, which is related to the rate constant times the enzyme substrate. So the velocity is related to the rate constant for the production of the product times the concentration of the enzyme substrate. The more enzyme substrate, the faster the velocity. Does that make sense? The more enzyme substrate, the faster the velocity. Correct or not correct? Right. What's the enzyme substrate concentration dependent on? Well, it's dependent on how much of that you can make, which depends on two things. How tightly the ES binds and how much E there is. Because if that uses up all the E, you can't make it go any faster. Now, how do you make E? Based on this model, how do you make E? Or how do you determine its particular concentration or its change over time? Well, the change of ES per time is related to how fast it's made, how fast it is made, versus how much goes back to make the original product versus how much goes on to make the product. That didn't make any sense. But anyway, so the first line here, I'm going to put a little bracket down here. Can you see it? Does it match under here? That means it's a production of ES. The K minus 1 ES is the reverse reaction. In other words, the ES going back to E plus S. And the last thing here is, this is production of product. Okay, production of product. So how much you made minus how much goes back to the original reactant and substrate versus and minus how much goes on to make the product. That tells us what the change in the ES per DT, ESDT is. How much you make minus what goes back to the original versus how much goes on to the product. That makes sense, doesn't it? Okay. Now, this equation right here, this thing, cannot be explicitly integrated due to factors beyond the scope of our particular discussion. So two possible simplifying assumptions have been allowed to allow integration. The first one is called assumption of equilibrium. And that is where the rate of K minus 1 is much greater than the K2. In other words, that the rate going back to form the initial reactants is much greater than those going on to make the product. That's called the equilibrium assumption. That's not all that good of an assumption. We don't go into that very much. That would be, let's see here, the steady state assumption, which is a pretty good approximation. And so that is where the steady state assumption is, where the change in ES per time is assumed to be zero. Okay. So let me review just real quickly before we go on. We have another couple minutes. This bottom line equation here has been created from the model or a mechanism that you see there in the middle page, middle of the page. So you have this very simple mathematical equation based on the model that you see there in the middle of the page, but we can't integrate it. So what we do is we assume that the change in ES over DT is zero. It's not going to change very much over time. Turns out to be a pretty good approximation. It was from that assumption that Michaelis-Menten developed the Michaelis-Menten equation. So here's how it's done. Here's how it's done. Do you have this next page available to you? Ah, yes. There's quite a bit to write in. So, top of the page here, enzyme kinetics, basic theory. We might as well start writing it in. Determine ET. ET meaning the enzyme total, total amount of enzyme in the reactant. That's equal to ET equaling the free enzyme plus the enzyme substrate. I should. Where did you get those boxes from? Oh, wow. Did you get yesterday's handout?
No, I printed it off.
You printed it off? I don't know. That was an odd thing. I don't know why your computer did. Oh, I left all my originals up in my office. You either can copy it from somebody else. It's just some error on how that. Because this is a set of equations that are. I'm used to using equation editor for Microsoft product. I don't know why it did that to you. I'm sorry. Okay. Do we have this written down yet? I'm not going to say much until everything's written down so that you can figure this out with me. All right. So, are you done, Mr. Bobbianco?
I've been done for a while.
Is everybody else done now?
Yep.
All right. All right. So, what we do is, according to this, we figure out what the enzyme total is. Now, does it make sense that the total amount of enzyme in the reactant is equal to the unassociated, if added up to the associated, or this free enzyme, and plus the amount of enzyme that's in the enzyme substrate complex? Because there's no other place enzyme can be. Is it's either going to be free or it's going to be bound up in that complex. True or false? Would you agree with that? In other words, where's enzyme here? Where enzyme is either E. The other form of enzyme is ES. There's no other forms to it. So it's got to be the total amount of enzyme is the free amount plus the complexed amount. You then take this equation right here. You then take this equation and you solve it. Let's see here. You set it equal to zero and you solve it for, I'm not sure exactly what you solve it for. You plug in this equation into it, and you solve it for ES, even though ES is on both sides. Okay? You rearrange it, and you get ES times the K1, K-2, K-1, K2, K1. I guess I got to be done. This, and then you go on, and you get the KM value. I guess we'll have to continue this. Do we meet? Today is Wednesday, is that correct? Do we meet tomorrow? Yes, and Friday as well, because we did not meet Monday. Thank you very much, ladies and gentlemen. Please read this section. Please, please, please. It's going to make so much more sense if you have an opportunity or have read it. Yeah.